Technology.ie. It's Wednesday, January 8th, 2014.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Kith Fáilte, hello and welcome to the Technology.ie podcast. I'm Conor Muinicon.
And I'm Michaela Dalen.
And we're very good this year in 2014. It's our second podcast already, Michaela. I feel new resolutions and things like that coming on. Glad I could catch you before you head off to Las Vegas next week. But before we talk about that and NamesCon, tell me about what is it? This, you got some sexy light bulbs on the internet, and they're cool, and they have Wi-Fi and things like that, and you can control them with an app. I don't know if you've heard of this thing, Michaela, but I have a switch on the wall by the door that I use to turn lights on and off. Works quite well, you know, for me.
Well, that's so kind of 20th century, Con. Now, the bulbs I got are LIFX, which was something we mentioned on the blog back in 2012. It was a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, and you funded it, Michaela, and this is your reward, or this is what you get.
Yeah, I mean, I funded it. I was one of the many people who funded it. So I funded at a level which gave me two bulbs.
Okay, how much did that cost you?
Good question, actually. Mm. I'll have to double check. But as one of the people who funded it early-ish on, the prices we paid were, you know, lower than what the retail price is now. I mean, the retail price now is, I think, about 85 a pop or thereabouts.
Okay, 85 euros for a light bulb. But, Michele, it lasts for 25 years, you say?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, if you think about it, the old-fashioned light bulbs, which, you know, are no longer legal in Ireland and have just been banned in parts of the US as well, you probably paid for a standard one which had nothing funky about it at all. What were you paying? Maybe 1 or 2 euro or something? The longer life, lower voltage ones that we're all using now, I suppose they start from about 4 or 5 euro and go up from that, I think.
Kind of at the cheapest end, I think. Yeah, can be significantly more expensive.
Well, you get deals on them a lot of the time when various companies are trying to push them. But you know, they're not the cheapest things ever. But let's say your standard light bulb might last you a couple of years, depending where you have it, obviously.
Yeah.
So let's say if you're paying 6 or 7 euro a pop for a light bulb for 3 years or 4 years, you can do the math. I mean,
absolutely. No doubt about it, Michele. And then again, this is more than just a light bulb. It's obviously energy saving and energy efficient in that as well. But it's going to be even more efficient because you have, you know, you have remote control over it.
This is the thing. I mean, when you get the bulb, and I blogged about it yesterday. Well, last night.
You did, and you took great pictures. Tell us all about it, Michele. I know there was excitement, and you said that.
Well, this is one of those things, right? The project got funded back in November 2012.
Yeah,
and the guys behind it have been very good at sending out updates and giving status reports. You know, as they went over to China and were talking to people, and you know, all the various different things about the logistics of how they're going to do this and how they're going to do that and all that. So that was great. That was fantastic. But unfortunately, of course, things took longer than they expected. So instead of shipping the bulbs to people sometime last year, they only started shipping them in the last few weeks. So they sent us all notifications there towards the end of last week to say, hey, it's shipped from, I think it's from Hong Kong. Hmm. So that's kind of cool, you know, an email, woo, with a tracking number and everything. So, you know, you open up the tracking website and you keep hitting F5 to see what's happening. It's like, no, it hasn't moved. But anyway, I came into the office yesterday morning, package was on my desk, open it up. There I have the bulbs in, all beautifully packaged. I mean, really well packaged. You know, they're light bulbs. You drop a light bulb, it isn't going to bounce.
Yes,
they do not bounce. As I said in the blog post last night, they're a bit like eggs. Mm. They don't bounce particularly well. So
it created a buzz of excitement, Michaela. You had a trail of techie people in Black Knight in and out to your office to check them out.
Not just techies. No, I mean, a lot of our staff were just kind of curious about it because, you know, I buy gadgets and gizmos on a fairly regular basis. And some of the stuff, I mean, it's kind of thing. You kind of look and you go, I don't know what the hell that is. And then, you know, it's something that for me, I kind of think, yeah, I need this for whatever. And I'm kind of happy with it. But nobody else can get really excited about it. But this is something where I had, like, loads of our staff were kind of trekking in and out of my office just to have a look at the damn things. Because physically, both between the packaging and the actual physical device itself, it's a little bit different. I mean, it's kind of bigger and it's heavier and chunkier than the normal light bulbs. And, you know, the Kickstarter project was huge. They far exceeded even their wildest possible dreams in terms of funding. So there had been a lot of buzz around it for the last year or so anyway. So
they got over $1 million and they'd only requested 100K.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was insane. It was one of those things where it really captivated people's imagination.
And I've got to say, this isn't a charity investment. It's certainly of interest. But I mean, Michele, this is actually potentially, this is a very huge market. We all have rooms. We all need to light them, and it's very clever indeed. I'm impressed with your blog post first of all, Michele, the detail that's on it. I'm impressed with what I see of the product itself, how it's packaged. Very straightforward. No messing around. 1, 2, 3 steps: screw in, switch on, and then download app, which is no big deal to anyone nowadays.
It's kind of funky because. Yeah. The device itself, the actual light bulb, has its own Wi-Fi.
Right.
I'm going to say that again, okay? It has its own Wi-Fi.
You mean it's an access point?
It's not just a question of the light bulb is Wi-Fi enabled.
Yeah.
No. It runs its own Wi-Fi network.
Okay.
So when you fire up the app on your iPhone, or, hey, if you're that way inclined, on your Android, you have to connect onto the light bulb's Wi-Fi network.
Okay.
So you connect onto the Wi-Fi for the light bulb, and then from the light bulb's Wi-Fi, you connect back onto your home network or office network if you have it, or an office, obviously.
Okay, and then you can hang the light bulb off the home network as well. Then from then on, can you?
But you can't do anything. It does it all itself.
Okay.
As in, the thing about this is, it's very kind of Apple-ish in the sense that there's lots of really cool, funky tech going on in the background, but you don't have to worry about it.
But if you're selling light bulbs to people, you don't want it to be complicated. You don't want them to have to do any detailed configuration.
No. You want it to be as easy and simple to use as possible. And of course, the light switches are still going to work.
Yeah.
Now, what that means is that for example, at the moment, I've got two bulbs. I've got one installed and configured. As I mentioned in the blog post, I still haven't 100% decided where I'm going to put the second one for now. I'm thinking I'll probably put it in my bedroom.
Okay.
Because with the lighting adjustments and everything else I can do with it, it will eventually replace the bedside light that I normally have. Because it's incredibly bright when it's on full power.
Okay.
But it's got that kind of range of light between just in simple brightness, but also in the tones of the whites and the colours.
Right.
That by tweaking the settings and creating a scene, as it were, I can bring the lighting down to a level where I can read comfortably in bed or whatever without kind of blinding myself.
Now, you mentioned tones and colours and levels of intensity, Michele. Is it like a disco rig in one bulb or what?
Well, potentially, yeah. Potentially. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that they've been talking about. Well, first off, in their Kickstarter campaign, and since then, via their Twitter account, if you look at some of the stuff they've been saying to people who've been interacting with them, the thing is that at the moment it does a number of things. I mean, hey, it turns on and it turns off. You can increase or decrease the intensity of the light. You can set, you know, go through a different ranges of whites, or you can switch over into the color spectrum and go through different ranges. You can run multiple bulbs slash lights, whatever you want to call them, from on the same network, and what will happen is that, you know, one bulb will kind of act as the kind of master, quote unquote, and all the others then kind of hang off it, as it were. You can do all that, but the kind of funkier things that they mentioned, like controlling your lights from anywhere, that that at the moment you can't do.
Okay.
I mean, I can control the lights, I can turn on and off the light anywhere that I can get onto my Wi-Fi network. So if I'm, let's just say, if I'm sitting outside the house, the Wi-Fi is strong enough, it'll reach outside. I can turn the lights on and off from there. Wow. Choose any brightness for a specific bulb, a room, or your whole house. That you can currently do. Create the colors to match any mood or decor. You can currently do that. Get notifications such as Twitter, Facebook, text, and more. You can't do that. Reduce your energy consumption, but you do that as soon as you turn the thing on. Visualize your music with animated colors. Well, that's the kind of thing which would be really kind of funky. Let's say if you could do... I mean, you've probably done this in the past, Con, you know, where you've hooked up music, the, what was this, Winamp had that, you know, the visualization thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of concept would be really cool, but you can't do it at the moment. Yeah.
Great for parties.
Oh, it would be fantastic for, I mean, not just for parties, but just for a whole range of different things. Absolutely. You can't do that at the moment. Yeah. Make an impression next dinner party, yeah, you can do that. Get creative with colours and effects. Well, yes and no. I mean, the controls are pretty good, but... like, for example, the app doesn't come with any presets. So you're unless you know a lot about light, you're probably going to end up getting a little bit frustrated. I mean, I know a little bit about light, but I wouldn't be a lighting designer or anything like that.
Right.
Whereas if somebody was to, you know, set up a bunch of kind of scenes based on different configurations, just to have there, so that, you know, some dumbo like myself could just, you know, use them. That would be really cool.
If you happen to stumble on a setting that you like, can you save that as a preset for future use?
Okay. Oh yeah, you can. Oh yeah,
no,
yeah.
It sounds like fun, Michele. And okay, fair enough. They've got work to do still on the development and on the features. But you're happy. Are you happy with it as a Kickstarter experience, Michele?
Oh no, I'm loving it because, yeah, as I said, I mean, it's okay. Sure, there's a few things where it's like, oh yeah, you know, it's meant to have this and it's meant to have that, and it doesn't yet. But that's okay. That's cool. Because, you know, if it wasn't, I mean, if I look at it this way, you know, if it wasn't for myself and for other people who funded it, it wouldn't have come into existence.
Probably not.
You know, that's, that, no, it wouldn't. It wouldn't, because they didn't have the money.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. You know, the thing as well is, you know, the some of the stuff that, you know, these Kickstarter projects, you know, the way that the direction they take in many respects is based on the feedback they get from people while they're running the Kickstarter campaign.
Which is fair enough.
Yeah. You know, if people are kind of going, hey, will it do X? And so you might go, oh, I haven't thought of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I think that's kind of stuff would be kind of cool. So, I don't know, I mean...
No, it's a good experience, and thumbs up to it. And you know, I'll ask you in a couple of weeks, maybe again, Michele, how you're.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I mean, if there's updates, I mean, what I said
you'll blog them.
Well, this is it. If there's updates to the app, then stuff will become available for me and others to play with.
Yeah, no, it sounds cool.
Until there's updates to the app, that ain't gonna happen. And that's the reality.
No, it's a positive experience, though, and well done to you for supporting it. And thanks for blogging it. It looks very interesting, and I'll be looking forward to checking it out the next time I visit you. Let's move on, Michele. We've got a few things we want to talk about. The Gathering has been and gone. 2013, huge increase in the number of overseas visitors to Ireland. Lots of revenue, lots of bed nights. You know, there was a lot of cynicism about it, but it's considered to be a success all round. And it's been relatively a success online as well. Except now they're going to shut down their Facebook page, Michele, with how many likes exactly?
Over 100,000.
Okay. Which is, you think, not a good idea?
I think it's nuts. I mean, the figures I pulled up yesterday when I posted about that, their Twitter account has 28,000 had 28,000 followers when I looked yesterday. It's now at about the same. It hasn't really changed.
Are they keeping that open?
I've no idea. I suspect not. No. I mean, this is insane because it takes a lot of time, work, energy, and even money to build up that kind of level of engagement for any brand. Mm. The Facebook page, 113,000 likes. And I'm looking at it here, and you know that metric they give you on Facebook that you can see as a user who doesn't have access to the admin section? Gathering Ireland, 113,955 likes, 11,844 talking about this. Mm. Now, this minute.
Is that now? Does that mean shares, or does it mean
no? Talking about it. It's to do with engagement, basically.
Oh, and it's recent engagement.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
I'm not 100% sure. I've never fully understood exactly what kind of actions would constitute talking about. Mm. But it's to do with interaction with something. So
I think I figured it out and promptly forgot it again at one point. But go on, yes.
Yeah, but that's so it means that there's quite a lot of interaction. I mean, by comparison, like you take, say, our Facebook page, we've got 8,559 likes, and currently there are 190 talking about this, and we have 437 ratings.
Yeah.
I mean, which isn't terrible. But, to get to that level took quite a bit of time.
Took a bit of work and time, no doubt about it. The same with The Gathering as well, Michele. And it's a shame to think that that they would throw it away. Now, I know, Michele, that you can, for example, you can rename a Twitter account. You can change the name of it and retain your followers and retain your relationships.
You can't, if you're thinking about, merging or doing all sorts of funky things like that with a Facebook page, no, you can't do that.
Can you change the name of it?
Well, change it to what? This is part of the problem, because let's say the obvious kind of things to do would be to leverage that for, Tourism Ireland or one of the associated organizations. Mm. But they already have presences.
Yeah.
So you can't rename to anything like that. But I mean, the kind of thing that, from looking at it in just really, really simplistic terms, if you were able to use, let's say you were with Tourism Ireland, just as an example, sure, why not just, share the same bloody content that you're sharing on Tourism Ireland, share it out to the Gathering thing? I mean,
absolutely.
See, the thing is this. I mean, damn well, because I've shown you some of the stuff. I mean, we don't manually go in on for some of these things and manually share content on across certain channels, because that would be silly. That would take up far too much time. It makes more sense to send it to multiple channels at the same time.
Yes, agreed. And you could certainly feed some of the content into that like that. But equally, in addition to that, Michele, if you've got such engagement with a page already, it could be used for special offers. It could be used for continuing special promotions. I mean, so, looking back on it, right, The Gathering was a special thing for 2013. There's no reason why there couldn't be, something to promote, maybe special promotions for 2014, 2015, 2016. Why not?
I mean, there's so much you could do. I mean, this is the entire thing. I mean, it's really, really silly to waste that.
Yeah.
And I just think it's a terrible, terrible waste.
You spotted this yesterday. I think Damien Mully tweeted it. And this turned into a bit of a conversation on Twitter and also on technology.ie. What do other people feel about it?
I don't know. I think we've had a little bit of interaction from people. And they're a bit confused as well. I mean, why on earth would you give up that level of interaction, because it just, you'd be like, let's say, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example. I actually can't think of any example any kind of. I can't imagine any way that I would allow something like that to happen. I just can't.
It's an interesting point in general, Michele, right? In the sense of you can generalize this for companies and for businesses and organizations in general from a Facebook and digital marketing point of view. Okay, let's just talk about your own situation, Michele. You run a company called Black Knight. You have a Black Knight page, okay?
Yes.
Occasionally, now I know you don't do this, but I know some other companies, well, such as, you know, Fault Ireland or whoever was behind the gathering in this particular case. Sometimes people start a page for the purposes of a particular publicity campaign, which is going to have a limited run. So I imagine this isn't a problem which is unique to the gathering. And so the question comes down to, in general, Michele, what do you think is the best thing to do? If you're going to run a campaign like that, should you just use a generic page and use that campaign to add additional likes, additional engagement to your generic brand page, which lives on and continues from year to year? Or, you know, is this always going to be a problem for something which is set up as a short-term campaign? Basically, is it the wrong way to do it, to create an account or to create a page for a short-term campaign?
Well, I think that, you know, there's two ways you could look at that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've done it in the past. We've created social media profiles for specific campaigns.
Right.
And, yeah, it is a problem because, I mean, what the hell do you do? You know, you build up a following. It might not be a particularly large following, but it's still a following.
Yeah.
And what the hell do you do with it afterwards? And I think I'm kind of tending more now towards the idea that it's like, what, say, setting up mini websites for particular campaigns. You know, that you need to look at ways of redirecting any of that traffic back into the mothership when the campaign is over. Don't let it just die.
And so, related to that question, Michele, is that something that social networks should facilitate, perhaps, individuals and organizations with? For example, should Facebook give users the opportunity to merge a page and its followers into a new page?
Definitely they should. But this is one of those things, I think, that is one of, you know, it's like with Google services in particular, where you discover that, and I mean, look, I'm sure this has happened to you, you know, over time, you've got multiple logins, there's different things hanging off different logins,
oh, yes,
and you end up in this kind of bizarre kind of scenario where you don't know what the heck, whether you're coming or you're going. You don't know what's going on.
I've got three different Google IDs that I'm using regularly. And I'd love if I could merge them into a single unified something that makes sense. But for one reason or another, it's currently impossible.
Well, I mean, for example, for us as a company at the moment, I've somehow, and this really upsets and annoys me, but it happens, I've somehow ended up with two YouTube channels for the company. Because whatever way they presented the options to me when I was logged in there the other week, I think I've now ended up where I've linked this non-existent channel, which, I mean, has no content, no nothing, to our Google Plus page. And I don't know what to do now, because all of our content, as you know, is elsewhere.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do I do now? Do I migrate everything? If I do that, okay, fine. But how on earth do I tell people that we've migrated us?
Now, that's a legitimate and practical problem from your point of view, Michele. Just on the other hand, right, there, would you say it's fair to say that, and I think that Facebook and organizations like it need to be careful as well in terms of what they allow people to do, because there's a certain contract or there's a certain amount of faith to be kept with the person who has originally signed up to follow or like a particular page or resource. And, you know, somebody in the case that we're talking about here could, for example, say, well, you know, I signed up to like, or, you know, I agreed to like The Gathering, but I didn't agree to like Discover Ireland, you know. And
well, this is true. I mean, it is, you know, that's another aspect to it. But at the same time, you know, that's something which the page owner, the promoter, should probably be concerned about more than the social network. I mean, the social network might want to, you know, warn the page owner, you know, these are the possible implications, you know, be careful about this kind of thing. But, you know, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? They're going to unlike the page. So what?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's, what else can they do?
Indeed.
So, no. I just think it's a terrible, terrible, terrible waste.
It is, yeah. And as you point out in the post, Michele, The Gathering has been a success on the whole, and a success on budget and in terms of the dividend and the return on investment to the country in general. So it'd be a shame to see, you know, some of that effort obviously went into engagement on social media. It'd be shame to see that perhaps ground is lost there as well. But that is, be that as it may. Let's move on, Michele. Now, CES is on this week in Las Vegas. There's so much going on, it's hard to keep track of everything. There's big screens and curved screens and Hollywood directors getting stage fright and things like that, as we were talking about. You can check it all out on technology.ie. But that's coming to an end this week. And next week in Las Vegas, probably not on the same scale, there's a new conference, the inaugural event in a new conference called NamesCon. Michele, you're going to it. I understand you're one of the speakers at it. First, yes, of all, though, tell us what it's about.
Well, NamesCon is a domain name conference. I mean, that's in, you know, that's the short version. Mm-hmm. It's one of these conferences that, you know, happens throughout the year. It was started and it's been run by people who are in the kind of domain investing side of things. But if you actually look at the schedule, look at who's speaking, it covers more than just domain investment. There's a whole range of different topics just to do with, you know, what's going on with domain names, both GTLDs, existing GTLDs, new GTLDs, country codes, IDNs, and all the kind of funky stuff that goes on around that entire thing. So they originally, I think they were planning for a couple of hundred people, but the latest reports say there's probably going to be closer to like 600 attending, which is pretty damn big for something so niche. The other thing which was interesting about the way it's being run is that, unlike some of these crazy conferences where they look for thousands of euro or dollars for a ticket, they were pitching it as a cheap conference. I mean, if you'd signed up for it a couple of months ago, you'd have got a ticket for like $100 or $200 or something.
Okay.
Which, you know, sure, it's still a couple of hundred dollars, but compared to the prices that you'd end up paying for some events. I mean, you take, say, Le Web. Like, what's that, $2,000 for a ticket?
I don't know. It's something enormous now, I think, at this stage. But yeah, without a doubt. And even say the standard price of a ticket for the Dublin Web Summit, I think, is 850 or something. There's some early bird ones at the moment that are available. But yeah, so in that price range, Michele, this really puts it into the range of, okay, not so much people from Europe, but let's say small time, maybe domain investors and people like that in the United States who could afford to go to Las Vegas for, what is it, a couple of days?
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at going over there for like maybe 3 days, maybe four, depending on what way you want to do things. The hotel that it's on in, I think, had rooms for around the $100 mark per night, or there or thereabouts. And, you know, it's Vegas, so there's a lot of hotels you could choose from. I mean, Vegas is one of the top destinations worldwide for conferences, because there's so many hotels to choose from. I mean, sure, you can stay in some completely over the top 5-star luxury deluxe whatever type thing and pay thousands of dollars per night, or you could find some cheap and nasty little place where it's, you know, going to cost you, well, a lot less, let's just say.
So,
like,
so
I think, I'm just looking here on my booking.com.
Yeah.
My booking for this is $89 a night.
Okay. So that's very reasonable indeed. So Michele, Michele, we know you go to conferences regularly and you have various interests to represent on behalf of Black Knight and that as well. But who else is going to be at this? What kind of people are we talking about here? Are they people from registrar companies such as your own? Are they domainers? Are they, who are they? And what
everything.
Right.
Everything. I mean, there's going to be registrars, there's going to be registries, there's going to be people from ICANN, there's going to be people, I suppose, with some kind of, who are interested in affiliate marketing in general. There's going to be a very wide, I'd say there's going to be quite a wide and diverse cross-section of people who have an interest. And you see, the thing is, at the kind of price point it's pitched itself at, it means it's a hell of a lot more accessible than a lot of the others. I mean, I saw something there the other day for a conference where it was going to cost, I think it was 6,500 for the tickets.
For the tickets, fair enough. Well, I mean,
I mean, at 6,500.
I think I saw that. You were talking about that on Twitter. I can't even remember where that was. But what that does actually is that really self-selects a certain type of attendee. Michele, I don't know who they are, but they're not the kind of people that you and I would meet on a... Well, you maybe, you know.
I mean, unfortunately, yeah, I actually do know these people. But that's not the point. I mean, it just means that there's no way that I could ever imagine myself attending an event where it costs that much for a ticket. I just can't see how that would work.
I think a lot of people, Michele, you know, even people with maybe with generous expense accounts just could not justify that. But okay, so we get it. This is reasonable. This is good value, and it's going to have a kind of representative sample of people who have an interest in domains. It's interesting, Michele, that this is the inaugural one, 2014, because 2014 now is the year where we're going to see an explosion in new GTLDs coming available now this year. That has something to do with it, obviously. Is that, you know, how significant is that in terms of is that going to feature strongly on the agenda?
Oh God, yeah. No, I mean, if you look at the people who are speaking, you got Frank Michalik. Frank Michalik is actually moderating. I didn't mean Frank Michalik. Sorry. I'm looking like through the list. Okay, Bob Mountain, he's with Afternic. They're doing stuff for new TLDs. Ben Crawford from Centronic, they're doing stuff at new TLDs. Birkins is involved in new TLDs. Fred Krueger is running a few. Who else is on there? Ray King has applied for a few. Where is it? But the ones who are actually giving the keynotes. Mm-hmm. You've got Frank Schilling from Uni Registry. There's a few other people, but Frank Schilling, he's applied for a load of new TLDs. So, and the other one which is kind of interesting is this guy called Jody Rich, who I've never actually met, but I've had emails from. He's the guy behind the .CEO application. I think a lot of people are curious to know what on earth he's thinking of doing with it, because a lot of people are quite skeptical of it.
Yeah, yeah. .CEO. Okay. So it's a kind of a prestige sort of a domain, but one which I imagine limited demand or limited appeal, perhaps in many respects. But I could be underestimating the number of CEOs out there who would like to have that. But what else is on the agenda, Michele? What else do you think, besides the new TLDs, is going to be of concern or is going to feature?
I'm just looking here now. Let's see.
For example, what are you talking about yourself?
Well, I'm talking about two things. One is to do is on the one panel where we're talking about IDNs, you know, the internationalized domain names, and CCTLDs. So the thing here is that, look, new TLDs, they're lovely, they're great, they're very shiny, but country codes are not going anywhere. And of course, IDNs is one of those things which is, you know, it's growing. It's something that's going to change over time. The other panel I'm on, we're talking about becoming an ICANN accredited registrar. So I'll be on that panel with Tim Cole from ICANN's registrar liaison team, and the session is being moderated by Frank Michalik, who has worked with registrars for years, and his business also does things like helping people to become accredited.
Okay.
So, you know, that's kind of interesting. There's other stuff there on doing business in China. Or what else is there? Geo domains, which is kind of interesting. Marketing, monetization strategies.
Okay.
What else do we have there? Yeah, no, I think that's pretty much. Those are the kind of the main ones for the first day.
Yeah.
What else is
you there? You mentioned geo domains there, Michele. That's like related to places and things like that. For example, we spoke to Ken Hansen, I think, some time back. .nyc would be one of those.
Yes.
And dot Vienna or dot Vienna. How do you pronounce Vienna?
I don't speak German, but I'll try dot Vine.
Is that it? So dot Wien, which of course is the authentic German pronunciation and spelling for Vienna. That's become the first city TLD to go live. It was delegated last week.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
And that's, so, I mean, the stuff going on all the time. I mean, there was a kind of break, as it were, over the Christmas period, because a lot of places just shut down, including ICANN. So since January 3rd or whatever, it's, you know, they started up again. There's contracts being signed. There's new extensions going live.
Hmm.
So I
was looking as well. I don't know if you saw that link I sent you, Michele, in relation to .shabaka, which was the Arabic for .site or .web, I think, which was one of the first new GTLDs to go live earlier in the year. They've just completed their sunrise period, and I've sent you a link to an article by Kevin Murphy on Domain Insight there, which says that 60-day sunrise period has ended at the end of December, with very few registrations due largely to poor promotion of the trademark clearinghouse in Arabic-speaking regions. They seem to be disappointed with that, and it raises the question from my point of view, Michele. It's all very well to talk about over 1,000 new top level domains coming on stream. We're going to see perhaps some of those fail, are we not?
Oh God, yeah. I mean, there's going to be there's two things. First off, I think I've mentioned that I know I've mentioned this in the past. You know, what constitutes success? Is a domain extension a success if it has 20,000 registrations or 1,000,000 registrations? Is it a failure if it has 10,000 registrations? Can it still be a failure if it has 1,000,000 registrations? Because, you know, depending on a number of different factors, the answers to all of those questions can be yes. Mm. So, like, we've spoken to Nacho from .cast, and, you know, it's quite a small TLD, but nobody would ever say that it wasn't a success, because it serves the community it was set up for, and, you know, it hasn't gone bankrupt or anything like that. So,
and it's not for profit, is that correct, or...?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's not a commercial.
It has community community goals as opposed to commercial ones, and so
exactly. Yeah. So that one, you know, that's one kind of thing you're going to see. But a lot of the new TLDs, you know, they're kind of funky, and and the people behind them may have some quote unquote interesting or quote unquote special, and depends how you want to spell that. Ideas about what their domain is going to do. And I suspect that, and I think others would agree, some of those are going to fall flat on their face.
Yeah.
Now, in the case of, say, .shabaka and some of the other non-Latin script TLDs, it's something that, you know, maybe they'll pick up their numbers further down the road. Who knows?
Yeah.
There's some interesting issues around the first phase of this new of these new launches, because a lot of the claims have to go through the Trademark Clearinghouse, and when it comes to certain, well, to non-Latin script parts of the world. I'm sorry if you can hear background noise, because there's also the crazy construction going on here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that in a minute, but let's stick to.
So I think some cases, those numbers are not going to be that impressive.
Yeah. But again, down the line, when it's open to all comers, that might be a different story in that as well. So we're going to wrap it up, Michele, and we're going to wish you bon voyage to Las Vegas next week. But before that, tell us about the hammering and drilling going on there in the background. What are you doing?
Well, as you know, we've been working on our own data, finalizing the build of our own data center.
Yeah.
And as part of that, we're doing a few things to kind of clean up certain parts of the building, then combine that with our water incident there before Christmas, where something exploded and water went everywhere. Right. Plus, they had to do a certain amount of recertification of various things in the building, which has meant certain things, like some of the doors had to be changed. And so they ended up kind of doing it all together. So if you were to come here at the moment, the place is pretty much covered from the entire building is covered in a layer of dust.
Right.
And I've got electricians, and I've got builders, and I've got carpenters, and I don't know what else, trekking through the place pretty much all day, every day.
Sure, it'll be lovely when it's finished, Michele.
Hopefully. It was a need of work. I mean, there's the other thing as well, is Con. Like, we've been in this place now for several years, and there were certain things that just hadn't happened. I mean, giving the place a bit of a lick of paint and cleaning up a few things, it was long overdue. So I think we're using the opportunity to fix multiple problems at the same time.
Well, I'm looking forward to see it, Michele. I'll come and see you after you get back from Las Vegas. And thanks again for talking to us this week.
All right, thanks, Con.